again, for conditions that they cannot control or conditions somehow forced to do it, they didn't actually measure the caffeine at the peakest of the concentration at 60 minutes. And they missed that window that we expect to have the highest effects, okay, exerted on the people.
Hi, Zacharias. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong show. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
Hi, Alex. It's a pleasure as well to be in your show. So I'm Dr. Zacharias Papadakis, and I'm an associate professor of exercise physiology and wellness at Baylor University in Miami Shores, Florida, in the United States. I'm the director of the undergraduate program in exercise physiology and also the director of the Human Performance Laboratory. In that lab, we do a variety of studies that focus on the lifestyle medicine perspective, neurophysiology. We test supplements for ergogenic effects. And what literally we do, we try to expose the students to the research pathways to learn the material through the hands-on experience and express themselves like to do the best in that perspective.
Awesome. So today the topic is caffeine. So let's start with some kind of explanation what caffeine is.
So caffeine is like an ergogenic aid, known for its like beneficial influence on performance. And in this particular case, we have good evidence that caffeine may be an ergogenic aid for sports like running, okay? But when it comes to events like jumping, the events that require power, events that stress mostly the anaerobic metabolic system in that case, the knowledge somehow conflicting. We evaluate the influence of caffeine on vertical jump height. One of the things that we discuss is that we want to make this as applicable as we can. So we deliver a message to the direct recipients of this paper, will be athletes and coaches. So we want, even though we use sophisticated machines to measure the jump height, like the force plates, cameras, we report not only basic stuff like the jump height. And that makes the outcome very applicable, because when you take this to the field, to a strength conditioning coach, to maybe a athletic trainer, to a high school a coach, they don't have force plates. They don't have this like fancy equipment. So they can do the basic like a jump with a chalk, you know, that you measure your jump height, you put your hand and you jump and you get the chalk, take the measuring tape and you measure the distance and you say, okay, you're improved or whatever. So that was the basic concept to try to validate findings from a previous study that was published in the Strength Conditioning Journal, I think maybe 10 years ago. And in that perspective, to see if the caffeine actually work as the previous like research has found in NCAA athletes. So we tried to replicate this study to the greatest extent, meaning that we had the same caffeine consumption. And for your reference, the NCAA puts the maximum allowed dose to be 5 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, because after that, if you're like more of that, they consider to be illegal, banned, and then the student athlete may have some, you know, penalties on that one. We have a dose response. So with caffeine, not everybody's going to respond the same. That's one, because we have the habituated coffee drinkers, right? And then the ones that somehow pristine. Their organs never had the caffeine, so they may experience this like effects of the caffeine in a great magnitude compared to somebody else that is like drinks coffee and a lot every day, like myself. So what happened with the dose, they have done like studies going from 3 milligrams to 5 to 6 to 9, even to 12, if I recall well, even more. And they have found that it's somehow the more you receive, the better it is, right? So that's one fact. The other fact that we consider is that the more you get, the more the GI disturbance you're going to have. So somehow right now, there's a consensus that around 3 to 6, the majority of the studies that examine the caffeine effects for performance, they have shown that the caffeine's ergogenic effect, at the same time mitigating any side effects that can caffeine have. Because if you go up to, let's say, 9 or 12 milligrams per kilogram body weight, right, you may have heart palpitation, you have jitters, you may have headache, you may have a variety of stuff, GI disturbance, okay? And then when we discuss about performance, the issue is that you have to get something to help you, but when actually you do the task, exercise, play a game or whatever, don't feel like your gut going weird, okay? Don't have this jitter and all that stuff, because that's going to influence your performance. So even though right now, as you said, the majority of the literature says that 3 to 6 is the range for some reason. Okay, NCAA decided that 5 is the maximum acceptable dosage. Why is that? I have no knowledge. I'm guessing because they may focus on some specific papers. But as I said at the beginning of our interview, right now the International Olympic Committee, the WADA, they have moved the caffeine to the safe substance list. So it's not anymore banned. So for me, again, that was another thing that I want to write and highlight, because I like to advocate about changing policies, is that if right now we saw that there is no difference, okay, then either like increase the dosage more than 5, or even take it away out of your ban list, because that actually make any change. Because this is what I saw, at least with my study, that there's no difference in the placebo on the caffeine group.
All right, so it is a little bit of a mess with policies and what is allowed and where. So it is complicated for athletes. That's a bad thing, because the clearer the rules, they are easier to follow and the safer they are for the athletes. So that's one problem you're flagging. Now, going back to your study, I am very interested in this study because most of my audience is sports and conditioning and weightlifting, Olympic weightlifting specific coaches. And the study you run had a vertical jump, which is an explosive exercise that, you know, you prepare yourself, then you explode, you jump, and that's it, gone. No more effort. That's all you had measured. Olympic weightlifting is very similar. So now, how the caffeine will influence this performance? There are not many studies very specific in this kind of. There are some for running and how long you can endure the exercise with caffeine versus without. But these type of explosive power-based studies are rare. So let's go into how you designed the study. You have real life in the title of the paper, which I really, really liked. So tell me about the setup.
Yes, so the setup was pretty much similar. And when we do study with participants, right, and we use a term that's the convenient sample, and when it comes to shooting athletes, you have to recruit your own shooting athletes. So in that sense, we want to have a real life study that we're going to use participants, very university student athletes, that they have been using the jumps in their training or their practice. In other words, we use sports that they utilize the open kinetic chain that they run and jump. We excluded sports like rowing that they actually, even though they are powerful athletes, when they do their rowing movements, they don't actually jump. So we use a single blind. That means that the participants didn't know if they received the placebo or not, only we, the researchers. And it was a randomized crossover design, meaning that the same person at one instance received the placebo. That was a cellulose, like let's say white part that didn't actually get any indication that might be the placebo or the caffeine. And then after like a while, after like maybe the next day, as we did in our study, they received the actual caffeine in the same capsule that they didn't know which one it was. Okay, so that was one thing, again, that we didn't change because of the replication study. The other thing that we didn't change was the 5 milligrams per kilogram body weight, the dose. So everybody to receive an individualized dose, because some of the studies that have even shown things or maybe didn't prove anything, they failed to give a dose based on the body weight. Imagine you have somebody that's like weighing 100 kilograms, you get 5 grams of caffeine, and somebody that has, let's say, half of the body weight to get the same amount of caffeine. The dose, okay, is going to be double for the lighter person, and then the effects will be double as well, okay? So in order to have everything somehow controlled and individualized, all of these studies, they have to provide a dose that's somehow controlled by the body weight. So other thing that we did is to give this at 60 minutes and test the person at 60 minutes after they had the caffeine or the placebo. And this was based on the pharmacodynamics of the caffeine, that we know that there is the peak concentration in the system in 60 minutes. That, again, is another issue that many of the studies, they fail to control. And even some studies like test their person way earlier than 60 minutes or later than 60 minutes. So they miss that time point that it has been shown that is like the highest concentration over there. So if it has the highest concentration, then it probably has the highest magnitude on the actual effect. So that's the other thing that we did. And then because we want to do something to be very, very applied and practical in that sense, we decided to use the jump that is very common in sports like basketball, volleyball, soccer, even like a softball baseball, okay, they jump to, you know, get the ball. And then we want to get accurate data. So in that perspective, we didn't use the field test measurements. We used the laboratory measurements. So we had the people to be on the force plate and then jump. And then we had the cameras, markers, and, you know, they actually calculate the jump height.
Awesome. Did you test their jumping before caffeine and after, or only after?
So one of the design that we did was to measure before and after the caffeine for both conditions, okay? And we did 3 trials for each participant. So what happens, another thing that maybe some studies, they don't have a rigorous design to evaluate some stuff, is they have maybe one measurement, right? Like maybe after. But if you do the after measurement, you miss what happened before the baseline of the person. Then other things that we did, and we control the studies, that we use people that actually have been used caffeine in the past, and they had to fill a questionnaire about their habits, so we knew exactly how much caffeine they've been taking. Because again, exactly as I said earlier, is that if somebody has never taken any caffeine and you give like a stimulus of the nervous system, they're going to be ready to go, right? But, and then I'm going to measure this before and after, I'm going to see a great magnitude of a difference, and then I'm going to say that the caffeine works. Well, it works because the system was in a state that was like pristine, bridging that perspective, and you give them something that you going to like 100%. But if somebody has done that for years, okay, and if you give them something that's like less of what they expect, then in a particular case, for them it would be nothing. It would be like another day in the park, right? So in that particular case, we test both, okay, pre and post, and also we test 3 times. Okay, that's another, like, let's say, uniqueness of the study that we added, and we deviate from the previous protocol. That was previous protocol. They did like 2 jumps, if I recall well, and also they had they took the some of the stuff, they take the maximum performance of the 2 trials, or they take the average. So when we sat down and discussed about the design, because I like stats, and I try to, you know, secure my stats in the way that the stats somehow are better in that perspective, I said that we're not going to go with the maximum number, okay? And we're not going to go with the average of the 2 trials. And since we have 3 trials, I'm not going to do either the max or the average. I'm going to use a statistical method to allow me account for the differences, not just between the individuals, but also the differences of the individual between the 3 trials. So I can actually eliminate maybe a learning effect, because we know if somebody jumps now, then jumps again back to back, most of the time the second jump is always higher because you have that learning effect, the experience, you learn better and you do things better. And then the 3rd one might be either the same or maybe even higher because of the learning effect. So statistically speaking, because I want to control that stuff, I use a linear mixed model. So in that way, I account for the differences between the jumps, I count the difference between individuals, and I feel that my statistical analysis actually was the most appropriate to capture, okay, that design in combination with the large sample size that we had to reach a conclusion that we feel that it's accurate.
Could we go back to participants for a moment? How many did you have and what sports and so on?
So we had 40 participants. It was like, let's say, Division 2 participants, and we had student athletes for cross country, softball, baseball, basketball, volleyball, and soccer. And those are like, you know, the sports that we have in our university. We didn't include, let's say, sports like golf that we do have, or rowing, because again, their basic locomotion, they don't have any jumping. So we want to have as much like applicability we could for selecting our participants, and also everybody to have pretty much the same experience with the jumping. So when we discussed about, you know, the trial order or the learning effect in that particular case, we knew that pretty much all the people, they have done in their lives countless jumps. So they knew how to do the basic countryman jump or the static jump that we did. And it was something very unique for them because they have done that numerous times, either like in training sessions, strength condition testing, because, you know, some sports like golf, probably they don't do any of these jumps. They may do for testing purposes, but it's not actually part of their own sporting activity as they do it.
What have you found?
Yes, so we've had 2 types of jump, okay? One is the countryman jump and then the static jump. So people that they are in this world, they know the difference, like really, really easy to execute. One, you have your start from a squat position and then you jump with the standardized techniques that you put your hands around your waist so you don't use your hands to like propel yourself like higher jump. And then the Kahneman jump is the next part of the jump test that we do regularly in exercise physiology and biomechanics as well, that we use your body as a spring. So you're from the stand position and then you bend down, then you go up, and you, by doing this motion, you utilize your elastic elements of your muscles. So like a spring, we expect the static jump to be lower in terms of height, and then Kahneman jump to be higher in terms of height, because you use that extra, let's say, power, strength, whatever you want to call it. What we found is that we saw a difference that was minimal for both type of jumps, but it was not significant. So we found that the males, they jump higher than the females, and this is something that most of the times we agree because of the excess muscularity that the males they have. They can produce more power, they can be more they can jump higher. But in this case, the caffeine didn't alter this gap, because it was the same, right? And then when it comes to the performance based on the trials, right, we did see that from going from the first trial to the second trial, there is somehow kind of improvement, okay? Regardless if you're taking the placebo or the caffeine condition, right? Showing that maybe there was like, you know, a warm-up training effect that influenced that kind of improvement. Again, non-significant one more time. And that improvement wasn't because of the drug or the caffeine itself, okay? It was because they learned to do that better. So when we see this is also, let's say, holistically speaking, we end up saying that, you know what, okay, if we use a dose that is NCAA approved, okay, in the legal limits, okay, probably if you take the caffeine, okay, to increase your jump, that's not going to happen. But that's always the but, right? That if you have individualized dosing, okay, if you consider maybe genetic things that we didn't control, okay, even hormonal moderators that we didn't control, we had like female participants, we didn't control for the menstrual cycle, but we have plenty of knowledge right now that shows that hormones, they don't play any difference in that particular perspective. But because we didn't control, we can actually support this one. But using the literature, we can actually say that, yes, even though we didn't control it for the hormones, we didn't have any problem with that one. So when it comes to this perspective, maybe different genetic makeup, hormone moderators, right? They may change somebody's performance when it comes to caffeine. And we discuss again performance and explosive performance, like a jump, something like the sprints, because we have way better image, clear image when it comes to aerobic performance, that we know exactly that, yes, caffeine is ergogenic and helps a lot in this case.
Okay, let's bring it all together and try to give some tips and some take-home messages for coaches and athletes.
So when it comes to caffeine perspective, I think the studies, they need to have as many as people as they can, okay, to do before that the power analysis, and then to account for attrition, and then to go even more, and don't actually cut the study because they have maybe a time limitation. I need to finish the study by that timeline because of this and that, okay? They have to focus on the actual project. They have to have a quality project, and this is happens most of the time when we have like an adequate sample size. Then whenever it comes to caffeine, because I have seen this when I was doing my literature about the caffeine, is that many, again, for conditions that they cannot control or conditions somehow forced to do it, they didn't actually measure the caffeine at the peakest of the concentration at 60 minutes. And they miss that window that we expect to have the highest effects, okay, exerted on the people. And then the other thing about the science, again, try to use, you know, maybe the best scan model we have in this particular case, that's the linear mixed model, to account for this difference between individuals. So that comes with the researchers, right? When it comes to athletes and coaches, okay, even though my study didn't show any difference, okay, because I do recognize that nobody can create a study that's like the best study with no mistakes. And since having the evidence from the aerobic literature that supports the use of caffeine, I would say since the WADA, National Olympic Committee, they have removed this as a banned substance, as long as you're an NCAA athlete and you are taking the 5 milligrams of body weight of caffeine, take it just in case, actually helps you, okay? Because when it comes to performance world, you have to be able to provide your student athletes with the tools to increase the performance. And as I said, even though my study didn't show this, okay, compared to the previous studies, even though we replicated that, they show that these guys are thin, they had 20, 22, and they found differences. And they said that, hey, take caffeine because caffeine is going to increase your jump height. We had 40, we didn't find any. But they had Division One athletes, had Division Two athletes. So you see, they're not exactly the same.
Yeah.
But I have the feeling, as I said earlier, that taking like from the aerobic perspective, that helps, even though the anaerobic has conflicting results and mine is a conflicting result based on the literature. I would say as long as people and coach, they can tolerate the, you know, whatever disturbance they may have by taking caffeine, stay on the safe limits, okay, and use it because at the end of the day, they might be beneficial. Right. And because I showed on my case it was beneficial, I don't want to steer away somebody that may gain something that, at my knowledge, at that like dose is highly tolerable. Okay. There's no any side effects and not going to harm at any point. Let's say, so if somebody wants to see something, they have to consume this at 60 minutes before they have to time the caffeine. Right. So if there is any beneficial effect, then that late timing to be right on the spot and get it. I wouldn't advise to go to, you know, a 12, 14 or 15 milligrams per body weight, because we do know that the highest you go, more than 9, 12, the side effects are like, you know, great. And some, again, they have the different tolerance on how they feel about the side effects. But if taking account my results that said, hey, it doesn't work that much, and taking something that maybe put you in a risk, because, you know, you have a palpitation, you have excessive heart rate, all that stuff, I wouldn't advise anybody to do it in this particular case. So summarizing, somebody that actually wants to improve their performance, they want to be in the safe NCAA dosage, I would say you can take it and maybe work for you.
Two short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite exercise?
Well, one of the, in this question, I'm like always the worst person to reply on that one, because I like everything. I don't have any particular exercise. Like, I mean, my wife sometimes asks me, what's your favorite food? I'm a foodie. I eat everything. I would exercise. I was a student athlete. I played like, you know, many sports, mostly basketball, but I was throwing the javelin. I was really good in volleyball. I played a little bit of soccer. But when it comes to exercise, I enjoy everything that makes me feel happy, energized. I mean, right now that, you know, I'm in my 50s, not every exercise is enjoyable for me right now and easy for me to do. I remember I went a year ago to play basketball with our students for like a good cause, and I was sore for a week after that. But when it comes to exercise, you know, everything makes me happy, everything is like enjoyable, okay, with people, with other, like, you know, colleagues. Lifting is something that I like to do right now. And, you know, after you reach like a certain age, you have to adjust your exercises, and one of the best things that I found that worked really nice for me, especially for my joints, is the swimming. So if I go, what's maybe not my favorite, but most beneficial for my health, I would say swimming, one, and because it keeps my cardio up, creates that like strength training, resistance, that's helping my joints, and then, you know, lifting or resistance with different exercises.
Awesome. And the last question is, if people want to follow your work or ask a question, where should they go online?
So online, they can find us on Instagram. I have Z Papadakis, you know, account on Instagram, and it's mostly the work that we do in my lab. Of course, they can go to LinkedIn and they can find like Zacharias Papadakis as well. And if they want to, you know, get short snapshots of whatever we do, again, my other professional accounts on X, you know, the X Twitter, Zach Papadakis as well. The other thing, if you want to see, you know, my research, you can go to Google Scholar, you can go to the Orchid ID. Most of the times, if you do a search and you put Zacharias Papadakis exercise, Berry University, you're going to get my institutional website. And then on the bottom, I have my full CV that they can download and see, you know, all my links, all the studies I have done, the experience that I have in different areas. And anybody that has, you know, any inquiry about, you know, a previous study and something they want to explore, ask a question, just drop something on, you know, Instagram or something, send me an email.
Thank you so much for today. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, that was great.